The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, friends. This is Larry Wilson for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you articles of interest from Kiplinger Personal Finance and also from AARP Bulletin. Our first article appeared in Kiplinger Personal Finance. The IRS is ending a free tax filing program. Taxpayers in search of ways to prepare their federal tax return for free will have one less option during the 2026 filing season. The Trump administration has shut down Direct File, a pilot program that allowed taxpayers in more than two dozen states to file their 2024 returns directly with the IRS at no cost. The program, which was limited to taxpayers with straightforward tax returns and Form W-2 income of up to $200,000 or $250,000 for married couples, was designed to lower the cost and complexity of filing tax returns. While Direct File was popular with taxpayers who took advantage of it, an October report by a Treasury Department task force said that fewer than 300,000 people used the program to file their 2024 tax returns in 2025, more than double the number who used Direct File in 2024 to complete their 2023 returns, but still accounting for less than 0.5% of all individual income tax returns. The report contended that the low participation rate failed to justify the cost of the program, which was estimated to be $138 per return. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent, who is also the acting IRS commissioner, said the private sector could do a better job helping individuals file their taxes than the federal government. Commercial tax preparation providers also criticized the program. Alternative options. The Treasury Task Force recommended that the IRS focus on promoting Free File, a partnership between the IRS and private tax preparation companies that allows eligible taxpayers to complete the electronically file their federal tax returns for free. While an estimated 98 million households were eligible for the program during the 2025 tax season, only 2.7 million tax returns were submitted with Free File, though, through August, according to the task force report. This tax season, taxpayers with 2025 adjusted gross income of $84,000 or less can prepare and electronically file their federal tax returns through Free File. Each Free File provider has its own eligibility requirements based on age, adjusted gross income, state of residency, or other factors. Depending on the program they use, some taxpayers may also qualify to prepare and file a free state tax return. Taxpayers who are ineligible for Free File can prepare their returns using the IRS's free fillable forms, an electronic version of paper returns. This program will perform math calculations, but doesn't offer guidance on filing status, deductions, tax deductions, or other issues. Providers such as TurboTax and H&R Block offer free versions of their software for taxpayers with simple returns. But it's important to read the fine print. If your return includes something that makes you ineligible to use the free version, unemployment benefits, for example, you could be in for a surprise fee when it comes time to submit your return. The AARP Tax Aid Program offers free assistance from volunteers at more than 3,600 libraries, malls, and other locations around the U.S., with a focus on taxpayers older than 50 with low to moderate incomes. You can go to AARP.org to find a site near you. Additionally, through the IRS's Volunteer Income Tax Assistance Program, taxpayers whose income falls below a certain threshold or who meet other requirements can get free help as well. This article was by Sandra Block. Our next article also appeared in Kiplinger Personal Finance. This article is by Ella Vinson. Is direct primary care right for you? With this model, you pay a membership fee for more personalized medical services. If you'd like to have a stronger relationship with your primary care doctor and quick access to them when you want to chat or schedule an appointment, direct primary care may be worth a look. With a DPC, or direct primary care arrangement, you pay a membership fee. And in exchange, you get unlimited access to certain primary care services, such as disease screenings, chronic condition management, and laboratory tests. DPC practices don't accept health insurance, and you pay the membership fee out of pocket. Compared with a traditional primary care office, which may manage thousands of patients, a DPC practice sees an average of 413 patients, according to the American Academy of Family Physicians. With a smaller load, DPC doctors can usually offer same-day or next-day appointments and spend more time with patients. Teresa Lovins, a primary care physician and owner of Lovin My Health DPC in Columbus, Indiana, says that she sees patients for an average of an hour, allowing her to discuss their medical concerns in depth. The average primary care appointment lasts about half an hour, according to a 2024 study from the Journal of the American Medical Association. Direct primary care is similar to concierge care, another membership-based model for primary care. Both involve a relatively small group of patients and focus on personalized services. But concierge memberships often cost more, with the annual tab ranging from $2,000 to $10,000, depending on the services you sign up for, according to the consumer website Value Penguin. That compares with a typical annual cost of $600 to $1,200 for direct primary care, according to the AAFP. Concierge practices usually offer more in-depth physical exams and screenings, and concierge care doctors may bill your health insurance company for certain services. Although the number of DPC practices has risen to more than 2,700 across the U.S., according to advocacy group DPC Frontier, they're not available in all areas. Covering the cost, your DPC membership fee includes the cost of most preventive and primary care services, but you'll need to have health insurance to get coverage for emergency room visits, care from specialists, surgical procedures, and other services your primary care doctor does not provide, says Moti Gamberg, Chief Executive Officer of home health care agency Care Home Care in Los Angeles. One option is to use a high-deductible health plan, which offers lower premiums and a larger deductible than a typical policy. If your high-deductible plan is paired with a health savings account, you can set aside pre-tax money, up to $4,400 for self-only coverage in 2026, or $8,750 for family coverage in the HSA, and use it tax-free for qualifying medical expenses. Good news on the HSA front for DPC patients. Beginning January the 1st of 2026, direct primary care membership fees are a qualified medical expense for tax-free HSS withdrawals, thanks to provisions in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. HSA funds may cover up to $150 monthly for individuals or $300 monthly for a family membership. Additionally, the law clarifies that enrolling in a direct primary care arrangement does not disqualify someone from being able to contribute to a health savings account if they also have an eligible high-deductible health policy. Previously, DPC patients who had a high-deductible policy could be barred from contributing to an HSA. And here's a timely article. This article appeared in Kiplinger Personal Finance by Carrie Ann Renzulli. Where to stash cash as yields fall? Your best options depend on how soon you'll need the money and your tolerance for risk. The Federal Reserve's interest rate cuts during the fall are having a ripple effect across most consumer savings rates. The Federal Rates Fund, the rate banks use to borrow and lend to one another, recently dropped to a target range of 3.75% to 4%, the lowest level in about 3 years. And the consensus among economists is that rates will continue to fall modestly in 2026, perhaps by another half a percentage point or so by year end. The result for savers? The days of easily earning 5% or more on cash have passed, financial advisors say. Many people were getting used to 4 to 5% yields on short-term money, but this is quickly drifting down to as low as 2% to 3% in some cases, says certified financial planner Todd Calametta, president of Calametta Wealth Management in Charlotte, North Carolina. Complacency can cost people thousands of dollars if they don't keep a watchful eye on the interest their accounts are paying. Today's lower savings rates, though, are still higher than cash yields have been for much of the past 15 years. 1% or less was common during the period between the Great Recession and the pandemic, and on average, they continue to outpace inflation. So you can still earn a solid real return if you shop around. Experts caution, however, that nabbing the best rate shouldn't be your only consideration when it comes to storing cash. Safety and liquidity should also guide your decision, not just yield alone, says Bennett Gordon, a CFP with MGR Wealth Management in Boca Raton, Florida. Here is what advisors recommend as the best short-term savings options now, depending on how quickly you might need access to your money and your tolerance for risk. Easy access, ironclad safety. If you want fuss-free, nearly instant access to your cash, your best bet is a high-yield savings account or a money market deposit account. Many banks and credit unions are paying about 3.5% on these federally insured accounts now, while some online banks are promoting rates of 4% or better. Recently, for instance, PI Bank was paying 4.6% on its savings account, and TIMBR was offering 4.4%. The trade-off? In return for a better rate, you may be limited to 6 or few monthly transactions or required to meet a minimum balance, typically ranging from $25 to $2,500. Money market accounts, which offer debit card and check writing privileges, tend to have some more restrictions than high-yield savings accounts. Before switching from your current financial institution, do the math to make sure a move is worth the hassle, Calametta says. You'll double your payout by moving to a bank paying 4% instead of 2%, but on a $5,000 balance, that translates to only an extra $100 or so a year. Better returns with a bit of risk. Storing short-term savings or emergency reserves in a money market mutual fund or exchange-traded fund can be a good option if you're trying to top your bank rates but still want strong safeguards against losing money, or if you need diversification and added safety in an investment account, such as an IRA or 401k. sold by mutual fund and investment companies. Money market funds invest in high-quality, short-term treasury bills and municipal and corporate debt. While they're not backed by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, they aim to maintain a stable net asset value of $1 per share. In effect, they pledge that you'll never lose your initial investment, says Jeremy Keel, a CFP in Milwaukee, and author of Retire Today, Create Your Retirement Master Plan in 5 Simple Steps. If getting a high rate on your cash is your top goal, and you're willing to accept a bit more risk, ultra-short bond ETFs are also an attractive option. Although the funds, which invest in short-term investment-grade debt, can fluctuate in value and shifts are typically tiny. In 2022, when bonds generally were hammered with double-digit declines, the average ultra-short-term fund lost just 0.1%, according to Morningstar. The most common mistake is comparing a high-quality money market or bond ETF with a low-quality one, Calametta says. The rates on the surface can often look very appealing, but there's no free lunch. A substantially higher yield always means a higher risk. Higher returns and delayed access. For cash you won't need anytime soon, locking in recent yields for several months or even a year through certificate of deposits can be a smart choice, given the strong likelihood of additional rate cuts in 2026. Online banks and credit unions lately have been paying between 3% and 4% on CDs with maturities of 1 year or less. These federally insured accounts, however, offer little flexibility. Most charge you a few months' worth of interest if you remove the funds before the term ends, although some don't. Look at ones labeled no penalty CDs if you might need early access to your money. The downside to CDs? If markets behave unexpectedly and interest rates begin to rise, you risk being stuck in an account paying less than other cash options. So don't go overboard tying yourself to today's rates. Our next article appeared in the AARP Bulletin. 2026 Medicare drug plans to cost less. Monthly premiums for Medicare Part D prescription drug and Medicare Advantage plans are projected to decrease on average in 2026, according to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. The premium for a standalone Part D prescription plan, a private insurer offering for original Medicare beneficiaries, is projected to average $34.50 next year, a decline of $3.81 from 2025, and a savings of nearly $46 annually. The average Part D total premium for Medicare Advantage plans with prescription drug coverage is projected to fall from $13.32 in 2025 to $11.50 in 2026 after Medicare Advantage program rebates are applied. CMS expects the average premium for all types of Medicare Advantage plans to decrease from $16.40 in 2025 to $14 in 2026. While benefits and plan choices are expected to be stable, Medicare Advantage plans from private insurers project that their enrollment will fall from 34.9 million in 2025 to 34 million in 2026. That's an expected decline of all those enrolled in Medicare from 50% to 48%. Millions of Medicare beneficiaries will still have access to a broad range of affordable coverage options in 2026, says Dr. Oz, the CMS administrator. People who want to keep their current Medicare Advantage or Part D coverage don't need to re-enroll. While average premiums fall, some plans will see an increase. Part D and Medicare Advantage plans can also make changes to their coverage and cost. Out-of-pocket spending for Part D covered drugs will be capped at $2,100 in 2026. But plans can also remove medications from the drug list, add prior authorization restrictions for more medications, and even increase co-payments before you reach the cap. An incentive that CMS provided to drug plans in 2025 will continue in 2026, but has been reduced from $15 to $10 and will allow plans to increase Part D premiums by up to $50 instead of $35. Our next article, appearing in Kiplinger Personal Finance, you may pay extra to share your streaming subscription. This article by Ella Vinson. If you're among the majority of Americans who watch streaming services, 83% according to Pew Research Center, you may share your plan with family members who live both in and out of your home. At one time, most major streaming providers looked the other way when customers provided their account credentials to people outside their household, say an adult child who moved away, so that they could watch shows through the plan. But more services have been blocking access to those who don't live with the account holder, requiring an additional fee to let them join the plan. And even within your household, you may be limited to a certain number of devices that can stream from your account at the same time. For some of the most watched services, we've outlined below the prices and policies for on-demand video content. Starting with Netflix. If you have Netflix Standard with Ads subscription, $7.99 a month, you can include people from outside your household on your account. But with the standard plan, $17.99 monthly, you can share your subscription with one person who doesn't live with you. It's $6.99 monthly for the extra user to have an ad-supported plan, or $8.99 monthly ad-free. Non-household members can stream on one device at a time within a household, and you can stream on up to two devices at the same time. Subscribers to Netflix Premium Plan, that's $24.99 monthly, which allows streaming on up to four devices concurrently within a household, can include as many as two members outside the household for monthly fees of $6.99 each with ads and $8.99 without ads. Each non-household member can stream to one device at a time. And Amazon Prime Video. This service is included with an Amazon Prime membership, $14.99 monthly or $139 annually, which offers other perks too, including free shipping on Amazon purchases. If you'd rather subscribe only to the video streaming service, you'll pay $8.99 monthly. Amazon says that adults who share Prime benefits and digital content must have the same primary residential address. Within a household, two adults and up to four children can be on an account. Amazon permits up to three concurrent video streams. For those ages 18 to 24, Amazon offers Prime for young adults, which includes Prime Video at a rate of $7.49 monthly or $69 annually. And Hulu. You'll pay $9.99 monthly for a subscription to Hulu's ad-supported library of on-demand programming, or $18.99 monthly for the ad-free version. To allow a non-household member to stream through your account, you'll pay an extra $6.99 monthly if you have a basic plan with ads, or $9.99 monthly for the no-ad plan. Hulu subscribers can stream from two devices at once. A non-household member who is on your account can stream from one device at a time. You can also bundle Hulu with various other services, including Disney Plus, ESPN Plus, and HBO Max. And lastly, Disney Plus, Disney's streaming service, charges $9.99 monthly for a basic ad-supported plan. For an extra $6.99 a month, you can include one person from your outside your household. If you have a commercial-free Disney Plus premium subscription, that's $15.99 monthly, you can share your account with one person outside your household for an additional monthly fee of $9.99. At home, you can stream on up to four devices at once. If a non-household member is on your plan, they can stream on one device at a time. And as we finish up our episode today, this is an interesting article, What to Know About Flood Insurance. This article appeared in Kiplinger Personal Finance. Even if your home is outside a high-risk area, you may want to purchase coverage. Since 1996, 99% of U.S. counties have been impacted by flooding, according to the Federal Management Agency. And in recent years, extreme rainfall has become more common, causing devastating floods from the Texas Hill Country to the southern Appalachian Mountains. But a standard homeowner's insurance policy typically excludes water-related flood damage. To be protected in the event of a storm that causes flooding, you must have a separate flood policy. Nationwide, according to FEMA, just 4% of homeowners have flood insurance. If you have a government-backed mortgage and your home is in an area deemed at high risk, you must buy flood insurance. The insurance isn't typically required if you're in a low or moderate risk area, but getting it isn't a bad idea. According to the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, 25% of flood losses occur in homes outside of high-risk areas. Flood insurance is available through the federal-backed National Flood Insurance Program, as well as from some private insurers such as Neptune and Chubb. Private insurers commonly provide broader coverage with higher limits than the NFIP, but they may not offer policies in certain states or in high-risk areas. You can get an NFIP policy as long as you live in a community that follows guidelines to lower residents' flood risk, and most communities do. Well, we are now out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. We hope you enjoyed listening. Please join us again next time. I'm Larry Wilson on behalf of the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please give us a call, 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.